The Crude Life with host Jason Spies.
My name's Peter Carroll. I'm a managing member of QMast LLC.
QMast LLC. First off, let's talk about your company, what it is you guys do, and just where you're located.
Okay. Our company is headquarters out of Grand Junction, Colorado. We are currently developing a high-powered microwave system for use in the oil field industry.
How long you guys been around? Is this a relatively new company, like a startup type of a company, or is this a company that recently found a new technology and has gone a whole new direction?
The company itself is 3 years old, but I've been working on this invention for probably the last 30 years. I started out at Bendix Field Engineering and then went as a research scientist to Oak Ridge National Laboratory, where we built the first prototype system of the high-powered system.
So you've got a background in energy. Is it primarily oil and gas, or is it, you mentioned Oak Ridge, that makes me think of the atom bomb or the atomic bomb type thing. Just what is your background when it comes to the world of energy?
Well, the invention itself, when I worked for Oak Ridge itself, we were looking to go after these degreasers, or they call them DNAPLs, dense, non-aqueous phase liquids, kind of like what they use for dry cleaning or degrease solvent degreasers, and they got into the environment. And when they're in the environment, they're almost impossible to get out. At Oak Ridge, my job was to take to look at ways to clean up the groundwater, and my background's in fluids, and I realized that you couldn't do it in fluids, so I started looking at the electromagnetic pathway, and that work led to the development of the HPM system, which over the years I've worked on to look at applications in the oil field industry, and we think there's quite a few.
Describe to me how your invention, your process works. It's a microwave oil production, and you know, obviously with the shale plays going on right now, they're looking at ways of fracturing and destroying that rock to get to that sweet crude oil, at least in the Bakken. I don't know about in the Niobrara in terms of in Colorado, but you know, here in the Bakken, we've got some of the best sweet crude in the nation, and they're getting very good results. But the method, I guess, they're looking at always innovating and becoming more efficient with the method. And is that what's going on here? Is the microwave oil production that you've come up with, is it just fracturing the heck out of those rocks?
No, it does fracture the rocks, but it's a little different than that. When you the way the microwave system works is you put an antenna down hole, and you've got a series of pipes coming out of the hole, and they're called waveguides. And what you're doing is you're pumping microwave energy from the surface down this pipe into a radiating antenna, and it's a directional antenna. And what it does is it sends out a beam, the microwave energy, and it starts rapidly heating the rock. This system is 500 kilowatts of power, so it'd be similar to like 500 microwave ovens down the hole itself. And what it does is it near the well, microwaves don't penetrate a long distance, and I think that's one of the reasons that they were overlooked for so long. But what happens is you heat the water that's in the rock very rapidly, and that causes the rock to fracture. And as that superheated water comes back towards the hole, it starts to strip the oil out. And some energy is lost into the oil itself. But for all in all, the water's a big key there, and it strips all the material out of the rock. Now, when the water and the oil is gone from the rock itself is fairly transparent to the microwaves themselves. So, for instance, you know, most of your rocks are like if it's a sandstone reservoir, those are quartz sands, and they have low losses. Calcium carbonate, limestone, they have low losses. Shells, aluminum silicates, they have low losses. So the wave can penetrate through there and start heating water and oil farther in, farther away from the antenna itself, and it'll couple into that, and that's what we call a migrating phase boundary. Now, we can probably go out 25, 30 meters from the well. And we will, of course, when we will either fracture that rock or we'll create these macropores that will, as the hot water molecules and oil race back towards the well, you'll get these big macropore channels. So we've seen where we can increase the permeability of a tight shell by 4 orders of magnitude. So you have a pathway for that seeded oil away from the well to flow back towards the well and to be collected at that point.
This sounds a little advanced. It sounds like an innovative technology. How is the energy industry accepting this as of right now?
No, they're really not. The energy industry is it reminds me of the government. They're pretty bureaucratic, and a lot of it has to be not in our, we didn't invent it here. So I've tried to go to industry for a lot of years on this and with little luck. So that's why we decided to start our own company.
You know, it reminds me of what's going on in the Bakken with the natural gas. We've got, 90-some% of flared natural gas happening. Yet we've got, individuals that have got science projects, essentially, that are able to capture that natural gas. But the energy industry doesn't have the resources or the money in order to support financially those quote-unquote science projects over at the drill rig. Is that kind of your biggest barrier right now, is the unknown or the cost? Or I guess when it comes to your barrier of entry outside of the bureaucracy of the energy industry, what are you finding the biggest hurdles are?
Well, I think the biggest barrier is the energy industry would grasp this technology in a heartbeat if we had a long production record showing what we had, what we can do with the system. Here, we have tested a full scale system. We have validated that migrating phase boundary, but you got to take it to that next step where you prove the economics of it. And it's been my experience that it's just hard, whether it's oil companies or other industries, to get them to take what they feel like is testing or development and realize that we're just out there. When we go out there and do our and build our full scale test, we're going to be doing more optimization. We know by modeling that the system works. We built the large scale system, as I said earlier, and proven that we can launch that phase boundary, and so we feel like we're ready to go. But that's a hard jump, up there for a lot of companies.
What kind of results are you finding right now? You mentioned the economics, and honestly, that's what it comes down to. It's tough to get somebody to look at something new at $30, $40 oil. Heck, it's hard to get them to return a phone call at $30 to $40 oil. So you know what I'm talking about. And, it's no knock on them. It's just, it's pretty much a price deal. And the energy industry's changed to where the old days of the wildcatting is gone. They know where all the oil is. They just have to wait for that certain price point before they can go down there and start to do their drilling and fracking, et cetera. Do you have a price point to where maybe your technology could be introduced? If it's a 50, 60, 70, does it need to be $150 oil, I guess? Have you guys gone to that length quite yet?
Yes, we have. The systems we're working are all solid state components. I mean, they're designed to run 10, 20 years. And when you set up one of these, you can set up numerous systems, and just have a few operators that can run them. So based on our calculations, mainly on personnel costs and on equipment depreciation, our costs are about $7 to $8 a barrel production costs to get it out of the ground.
So it looks like you guys are getting pretty efficient with this in terms of, you go into an oil execs and you say we're only going to add $7, $8, call it $10 to your barrel of oil, just round up for whatever reasons. Is that much, that $7 to $10 of adding on to the oil? Is that a lot for somebody who would be downstream or be an ancillary company to the the major energy company?
Well, if I understand your question here, that a lot of plays, that you look around the U.S., these hydrofracking plays up in your area, the Bakken and stuff, from the information I read, it's like $30, $40, maybe $50 a barrel is our production cost for these type of oil plays. ways. And, you know, I think that has a lot to do why oil's staying right there around, you know, $50 a barrel to keep a lot of the, you know, to keep a lot of the U.S. players out of it. With us, we still think we can beat those costs because, you know, one factor I didn't talk about is that natural gas that you were talking about that's flared off. We use that natural gas to power our generators that run the microwave system. So we have no, we actually just, for our fuel to run the system, we're using the oil that we're producing to run it. So you have negligible cost in there. So the big thing another item on cost is that this is, we have a surface system that we've tested that I talked about. So for now, we're looking more shallow plays, and we're looking at more unconventional, like oil sands, typical in maybe Utah and Canada, or oil shells. I live right here in Green River. Right here in Grand Junction, which is surrounded by the Green River oil shell formation. So these are shallow. You know, they cover thousands of square miles. They're shallow access to them. In some places, you just take a bulldozer, push the dirt away, and drill your hole and start producing oil right there. So there aren't those large production costs associated with drilling and that you'd see in a normal conventional oil.
And I want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. The microwave energy production, the microwave oil production, would that be would that be a addition to the traditional fracking, or would that be in place of the traditional fracking?
That would be in place of it. That would just be another source of oil. The next step in the development of the microwave system is we have patents and designs and currently starting the development program on a downhole tool system where this is a microwave that can fit down a conventional the oil well. And it can get to depths to where, but one thing we're looking at is going and rehabilitating wells with this type of system, and to be rehabilitating conventional wells. And for instance, some of the data I've looked at, there's 400,000 stripper wells in the United States. You know, those wells that are produced in 10 barrels a day, and we feel like we can take the microwave, go down into that producing zone, and in that kind of situation we'll create a permeable cylinder around a well that can it'll heat the rock if there's heavy oil paraffins that are clogged, it'll remove those, and then it'll fracture the rock out to some distance. We could go out, say, maybe just a few feet, say, for instance, and then you create this permeable cylinder, you know, maybe 6 foot diameter around a conventional, say, four inch production well. And so you've got a lot of surface area for that oil to flow into that well, that we believe will revitalize these wells, these old stripper wells, and they may even produce more because you've got such a large area for oil to flow down, so you don't need that huge pressure drop to drive the oil to the well.
And again, if I'm hearing this correctly, you would replace the water or the liquids that would be going down there. And I just saw the other day the EPA had a release that these fracking solutions are kind of contaminating some of the water supplies. And so this, what you're talking about, it would be kind of a solution to that. Am I hearing that right?
Well, you're right. You're right. I saw that same EPA report. You know, I think fracking, you know, you've got large volumes of water, and you have to dispose of them, and so that kind of report, you know, there are some issues with that. With the microwave, we don't use any water. We use the in-situ water that's in the rock, and from everything I've seen in the literature for a lot of different oil types, there's always some percentage of water in there. And so in the Green River, it tends to be pretty high, the water content, you know, maybe up 15%, and some evidence shows that from several sources that for about every two to three barrels of oil that you produce, you're going to end up with a barrel of water. And so for us down here, we're pretty air. We get 9 inches of rainfall a year here, so you know, water is pretty valuable. So to kind of answer your question there, we don't need outside sources of water. We actually produce water.
Is there any environmental concerns with the microwave? I know anytime you're dealing with radiation, of course, somebody might put up a red flag on something like that. So I just, any sort of environmental concerns or anything that you guys are combating from that nature?
No. In fact, I think just on the radiation part of that, remember, you got your microwave oven in your house, and you put your food in there and radiate it all the time. And I don't think there's been any widespread issue there. It's very high powered, so you got to be. There's a lot of safety issues, and you got to make sure you cover all the safety issues because this isn't a toy. But the your beam's underneath the ground that you're sending out, and it's attenuated before it can get to any distance, before it could ever come back out the ground itself. So safety's a big concern there. But as far as any environmental hazards, I think we think we're pretty friendly. Environmentally, we have a small footprint. We just need shallow wells. The gas that is produced, where we want to capture that gas. Our goal is to have zero production emissions for microwave wells.
And one of the reasons why I found this story to be pretty exciting was, if you kind of look at the history of oil and gas, you know, fracking is a technology that was invented like in the 60s, I want to say. And older than that, yeah, correct. I mean, so it's been around for a long time, and it took 50, 60, 70 years for it to become mainstream. Now, when I was doing some research on this particular story, you guys have been studying microwave technology since the early 80s. Do you see where this is going to become that next preferred choice of oil extraction, just like fracking became over the last, 10 years?
You know, I don't know if it'll become the preferred choice, but I think it can fulfill a niche within the system itself. Unconventional oil plays, it has a niche in there. If you look at, like, up at the Bakken, where they do these, where you're at, where they do these huge fracks, the data I've looked at, like seismic data and such, show these fracks can go out like a half mile or so. With our system, as I said, about 25 meters or 80 feet, we're pretty much, we're losing too much power to make it make sense to keep going in that direction. So we can't get out as far there. But if you look at a lot of these wells that are hydrofracked, I mean, they're gangbusters to begin with, but then they drop off pretty drastically. And so with the microwave, I don't think we come in and replace large-scale fracking like that. But we could go into areas like, that are like Europe or New York or places like that where they banned hydraulic fracking, and it could work in those areas. Or we could use it to supplement the conventional oil industry, as I stated earlier, that we can come back and rehabilitate wells. Or one other thing is we could pressurize this. We have the ability to pressurize the formation, so you can eliminate these big water or CO2 floods, because we can just simply heat, put a microwave well in a conventional oil field and heat the oil field to raise the pressure within the oil formation itself.
And I can see where some of those oil sands up in Canada, or even the Marcellus, would be a perfect fit for you. Is that, and that's what you guys are seeing, more of those shallow plays, just because of the certain power. Is it come down to the power of the microwave, or once it reaches a certain power, it becomes a little bit unstable, or not unstable, but maybe unhealthy, I guess? What's the reason for only going 80 meters?
Well, the reason is you're going to get that. I said that rock is fairly transparent to microwave energy, but you do lose a little bit of power there. So as you get out there, when you're out, say 25 or 30 meters, you've only got about a tenth of the power that you started with out that distance there. So that's still 500. And that's still 50 kilowatts, which is pretty, and we'll still do the rock, but you're pumping a lot of power in there, so it just doesn't make sense to go out that far. Here in these unconventional oil shale plays, you can drill, you can drill, uh, you, the, the, oil shale is pretty close to the surface, so you can drill lots of wells because your drilling costs aren't a big factor in this type of technology.
Well, any final thoughts you might have? Anything that we missed? Anything you want to make sure that the listening audience might need to be aware of?
Well, I just think one fact that we did stress a little bit there, but this can be a pretty environmentally friendly type of technology. And we're looking at that part of it. We create these cavities underneath the ground when we take the oil out. It should be ideal for carbon sequestering, maybe to help offset some of the oil that's actually produced is burned, you know, within the economy. So there's a lot of different potentials for the microwave in those type of areas.
Interested in becoming a sponsor? Email studio@thecrudelife.com.